If anything I say, or any of us say, during the next 4/5 weeks, that would lead to more understanding or a sense of compassion, awakening, forgiveness, or gratitude, then you might want to hold on to it. If anything I say or we say that leads away from any of those realities, you're free to let them go immediately because they're worthless. And so I'd like to say that as a start, especially when we're dealing with shamanism, because it's the name shaman comes from the Siberian Tungus language, and the word means someone who is able to be heated up. So hopefully we can get a little heated up in some of the things that we're going to talk about. But heating up or cooling down doesn't necessarily take us away from these four realities, which I understand to be the inherent in and the goal of any authentic religious experience. I think that these realities are present transtemporally. They're ubiquitous. The wonderful translation of the Christian New Testament by Stephen Mitchell takes out those parts of the Synoptic Gospels which definitely aren't in this circumambulation of mystery, this path, the path of compassion, awakening, forgiveness, and gratefulness. And therefore it's more alive. There's less polemic. As it says in the Tao Te Ching, the master doesn't have to defend herself. She just sees what's there. And so these can be very heated things because we're also dealing, when we're dealing with shamanism in general, and we're dealing with Christian shamanism in particular, we're dealing with power and power complexes. So where we have power, we have power complexes. Where we have parents, we have parent complexes. Where we have complexes, just a quick thumbnail review of Jung, where we have complexes, we have archetypes. And where we have archetypes, we have lots of energy. And so sometimes some of it doesn't necessarily lead to compassion or gratefulness or forgiveness in the short run, but there's a long run too with a lot of these things. Well, I would like to read what I wrote about what we're going to discuss and what I prepared. First, there is a working definition of a shaman. And I think that there are probably as many definitions of shaman as people who do any type of study of shamanism. Like there are as many definitions of alcoholism as there are alcoholics or doctors who try to define themselves out of being diagnosed as one. And so a working definition for me, and you're going to hear several working definitions, is that a shaman is a person who's been forced by fate to take an inner awe-filled journey, which ultimately gives a new form to the person and to the culture. The journey demands sacrifice, isolation from collective expectations, the collective expectations, and a particular form of courage, which is able to accept new forms of awareness, i.e., new states of altered states of consciousness, new forms of awareness, and new forms of the divine. And that's a lot of courage. A lot of courage. It's a question for a shaman. It is not really taking the experience of a tradition, and here I'm just drawing a carrot, and the shaman stands here, and you can see that the shaman has to fit into a narrow area, and that is really not what shamanism is about. Some would look at it in a very narrow definition, where all of the experiences of the shaman, and we're going to talk about this evening, has to fit into a certain pattern, or is molded into a certain pattern. The shaman, the authentic shaman tradition, on the other hand, is a person who is open to, both from the head and the heart, this core ago, the movement, agere, to move, movement from and of the heart and the head, to whatever experience await one is called to. Now that's a lot of courage, because you don't know the perceptions of reality that we were all born with and trained with, born into, let's put it that way, are subject to dramatic change in a shamanic journey. And so that's a lot of courage. Every religious tradition has stories of persons who've walked the shamanic path. Every tradition. And therefore, you hear people write about or say, well, so-and-so couldn't be a shaman because they're not of the right tribe, or not of the right ethnic mix or branch or what have you. And yet there is what I'm suggesting to you in good Jungian fashion, and I will try to make a bit apparent, is that the person of the shaman is indeed an archetypal reality, meaning it's everywhere and at all times if it's an archetypal reality. The difficulty that we have is that since the 10th century, we are not as aware of the shamanic tradition within Christianity. In a way, it's been snuffed out. Not in a way. It's been snuffed out. People have consciously tried to snuff out Christianity. If someone gets too much into the world of spirits, then she or he might be liable to be burnt at someone's stake in some strange foreign culture. We'd never burn anyone in this country, of course. Okay. So, we have these traditions. And shamans are called by different names: sage, saint, bodhisattva, a few of these names. However, there is a little discussed Christian shamanic tradition in which Jung stands, both as a visionary and as a healer of souls. What's my inference? Jung is a shaman. Okay, which I think a lot of people understand shamanism correlating very strongly with schizophrenia would say, yes, he is. There's no question. As a matter of fact, many, many years ago, I was studying group therapy in Munich under a professor, Klockenhoff, and I was introduced to Klockenhoff, who later became a dear friend. But they said, this is Lavin, he's the Jungian. And Klockenhoff said, der Jung, der was the schizophrenic what turned out all right.